This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. And today we'll be looking at mid-century modern house design. Our guest is Della Hansman. She is a Madison architect who specializes in mid-century homes and helps owners upgrade their vintage houses to match their modern lives. Her business is called Mid-Mod Midwest. Do you have a mid-century modern home? What do you love about the style? What questions do you have? Well, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Della, thank you so much for being back with us.
Hi, it's great to be here.
You know, I've got to say, when I say your business, it kind of makes my mouth happy. Mid-Mod Midwest. I love it.
I love it, too. I love Mid-Mod, and I'm a Western girl, although the irony is that when I started the business, I assumed I would only be helping people in Madison, maybe around me. I was like, well, not just Wisconsin, outside the state, but our business now works with homeowners all over the country to help them plan really good updates for their mid-century homes. So we've kind of grown outside of our name a little bit.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So for those who aren't, I mean, we've heard mid-century modern, but why don't you define it for us? Because it can mean a lot of different styles, can't it?
It can. It's a big umbrella, and it's been experiencing a resurgence in popularity right now, which means that a lot of people like to just use it as I have a good thing. I'm going to tell you what's mid-century modern. And that's fine because it's always been kind of a broad tent. It's a demarcation of a time period. So not really just one look or one style, but the style ideas that were floating around in architecture, in furniture design, in art, in music, from roughly World War II going up to bordering into the 70s, I would say. Mm-hmm. And when I look at houses, which is obviously my primary mid-century obsession, I really think about the specific region or city that I'm talking about, because each place had a different mid-century building boom. So in Madison, it didn't take off immediately after World War II, but certainly by the very late 40s by 1950, you're starting to see a new kind of house going up as they answer the housing crisis they were experiencing then. And then it just rolls right through into the mid-60s very solidly here of a changing but a consistent style of buildings.
What are some of the features of that particular style?
So mid-century houses were all about practicality because they came out of a crisis. So they were meant to be, this particularly the earlier ones, they're quite small, they're quite simple. They use unornamented design, so no crown molding, no complicated cabinet doors. It's like slab plywood fronts, simple clamshell or what's often called ranch-based trim. They're building in plywood and brick and concrete, and just starting on the idea of drywall. Although if you live in an early mid-century house, you may notice that it's hard to put nails into your walls, and that's because they were using proto drywall, but then the guys who were installing it were trained as plasterers, so they just used it like it was lath and plaster and plastered another quarter inch of plaster right over the front of it. So it's an age of technological transformation, and really what I love about it is that we get this connection back to history, to organic materials, to craft, to building materials we don't have access to anymore because we used them all up in that era. But also there's this freshness of like, let's try formica, let's try chrome, let's try stainless steel. What's easy, what's low maintenance, what's fun, what's casual. So it fits really well with our current ethos of what we like in a house. And that's nice.
Yes, for sure. And the crisis you're talking about was the World War II, right?
Right. Well, because we'd gone through, if you look at American history, we'd gone through a pandemic and the depression and a war, and all of our sort of national resources were thrown outwards. And then people came back from the war and they were like, we want to start families. We're about to be the baby boomers, but we don't know it yet. We're about to make the baby boomers, I guess.
Yeah.
We don't know it yet. Let's get houses. And so they were just like, let's go as fast as possible. And that question was answered in single family housing. And it was answered a little differently on two different sides of the country. So in California, we have like the Cliff May Ranch. That's a little more what we think about when we think mid-century modern, with a post and beam structure sometimes, some big floor-to-ceiling glass panels. And that idea sort of started to percolate very rapidly eastwards. And then on the East Coast, we had like William Levitt with the Levitt townhouses and that more Cape Cottage style, which is also mid-century. It's just mid-century traditional, not mid-century modern. And those two styles, funnily enough, in Madison, they I don't think it's actually the geography of it, but the people who were building those houses on the west side, young professionals, lawyers, state workers, they were building a lot of more modern ranch style houses, even proto ranches. And on the east side, more of the factory workers at the Oscar Mayer plant and more places like that. And they were building more of the sort of worker cottage style of houses. Mm-hmm. Eakin Park is actually the first, it's a national landmark, and it's the first neighborhood, even before William Levitt had the idea of mass producing the houses. So sort of doing all of the foundation and then all of the drywall and then all, you know, all of the framing. Wow. In pieces rather than one house at a time. So
I did not realize that. Here in Madison. Yeah, because you hear Levitt all the time, but you never hear anything about the Mid. Well, typical, isn't it?
He was successful and he was loud, but he didn't do the idea first.
Yeah, well, sometimes a squeaky wheel, right?
Right?
Yeah.
And history rolls over these things. So I think it's just really fun to, sometimes we think of like, it's not a really cool mid-century house unless it's totally glass wall, kidney pool in the backyard, but there's so much to love about even a really modest early mid-century house. There's the kernel of the idea is there of simple shapes, of a little bit of flow between spaces, of, you know, just a little brick knee wall on the front and the same brick in the fireplace that gives you that inside outside material connection. Mm-hmm. And then you can develop it, you can build on that. And what I like to think about doing is making choices for the house that are modern, that do suit our current lifestyles and tastes, but also are kind of things that would have made the original homeowners light up if mm-hmm. they'd had access to them. You know, they were building houses that were meant to be added onto. The structure of a mid-century ranch with its gable roof is so easy to put a cross gable on and another one, you know, throw out a bedroom, throw out a den, add a garage, add a bigger garage.
That's so true. That happened with the house I grew up in. Just kept adding on to it. And
right?
Yeah, eventually it kind of looked like a hotel. It was so long.
Yeah. They can get a little chaotic, but it was very much meant. They weren't saying everyone should live in a house this size. They were like, this is the house we can build right now the fastest and then move on to the next one and move on to the next one.
Exactly.
And as time goes forward, they get a little higher in design, a little bigger, a little more spacious, more bathrooms built in originally, that sort of thing. But
so
when
I was doing a little research for this show, I was like, gosh, it seems like MCM has been around for a while now. And I was kind of looking and I found an article from 10 years ago and an article mm-hmm. from last year. Why is it hanging on so much? Because trends usually don't. Why is it so popular?
Well, I think it's trendy and not. I think it's trendy because It's the thing we're doing in the moment, although it's not the only trend at the moment. I think much, much more common is the sort of cottage style that's being pitched by HGTV and has been for a while, although they've kind of come around and started using mid-century modern as a catchphrase. I think there's a certain resonance we always feel with our grandparents' era. So if you go back to like the 80s and 90s, everyone was throwing back to a Victorian style of woodwork and built-in and kitchen cabinets and everything. And then we come a little bit further forward. And in the early 2000s, it was all cottage style, throwing back to like the 1930s and that grandparent era. And now we've rolled a little further forward. And now, I mean, I bought a house with the exact same front door as my grandparents' house. And my parents looked at it and said, yeah, it looks old. And I was like, it's retro. So
they don't get it. They don't get it.
I have inculcated them into the movement now, but most of their peers think it's nothing special because it's just what they grew up with.
Right. Well, it's kind of true. Now, I like the early part of mid-century modern things, so more from the late 40s, early 50s. Mm-hmm. And I'm on a couple of Facebook groups and I see pictures of things from the 70s. And that's like, oh my gosh, that's my living room. Why do you think that's fun? You know? So,
yeah,
no,
it's
I don't want that.
I think it's cool if you remember it from childhood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Oh, so what are some of the pluses of buying a mid-century modern home?
Oh, they are manifold. It's such, as a style of house, they're so livable. They're so close to how we want to live in a house today. There's some adjustments that come up again and again and again with basically every client I have, but they have a casual floor plan. They're not divided up into a bunch of little rooms. They're really sturdy and they're close enough to our modern technology that they don't have mysterious, like you don't have to deal with knob and tube wiring. You're not trying to retrofit a lot of scary older things. Although mid-century homes are getting to a moment now when they could use some preventative maintenance to go forward for future decades, but they're not it's familiar language of updates. And they're so easy to live in because they're generally on one floor or they're largely sort of on one scale. So they're a great like starter home. I mean, nothing. Homes have become less affordable over the last couple of decades dramatically, but a ranch house compared to a bigger house is more affordable. And yet you can really live in one your entire life. You can age in place in a ranch house. And that the evidence of that is that one of the reasons they're popular now is also because they're becoming more available now, as the original homeowners are in their 80s and 90s, finally not being able to stay in their homes and moving to assisted living. But they were able to really stay put and keep up the care and live conveniently. And that's nice even for a young family, because anyone can slip on a banana peel and break their leg. True. And it's nice to have your life on one level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
go ahead.
They're easy to play. You know, you can, you like the early mid-century, you can tune your style forwards and backwards. You can take a house built, in my opinion, anytime in the mid-century era and say, I want this to be mid-century traditional. I want a grandparent time capsule and it's going to be so twee. Or you can say, I kind of just like a simple minimalist design. I want to get a couple of statement pieces of furniture and just not have a lot of clutter around me. And that also suits really well into this type of house. So there's a lot of flexibility within that big tent of what we call mid-century. So you can personalize so much while still having the confidence that you're making timeless choices rather than trendy ones that are going to look really good this year. And then in 5 years, everyone will know exactly what year you bought that thing.
Yeah, I really like that. That's one of the reasons why I've always liked to harken back with more traditional designs, because it doesn't look dated in, like mm-hmm. you said, 4 or 5 years. I mean, those gray walls, folks, they look dated already. So
they do. They do. And I say this as someone who has painted a few things gray.
I'm sure.
House, but my advice on that, too, is if you want to make a trendy choice, do it. You know, trends are fun, but make your trendy choices in easy to replace and easy to change ways. So I can't say any more before stopping to say, please do not paint your brick. Do not paint your brick gray.
Please, no,
do not paint your brick white. Don't paint your brick. It's an unchangeable choice. Once brick is painted, it can't be unpainted. But paint your wall any color you want to, and then change it next year, or change it in 5 years, or love it forever. And the person who buys the house from you can say, oh my God, their taste.
Right, right.
So
that's half the fun of buying a house is, you know, criticizing the person's taste, right?
Right? Can you believe what they did here? But hopefully you say that and then you can easily change it to your own taste,
right,
as opposed to some things. Painting original woodwork is not the best plan. That's a little easier to roll back, but painting original brick is mm-hmm. a one-way road.
Yep.
So
it certainly is.
So, my advice is to try to put your trendy choices where you can take them back.
let's talk couch cushions, right? That's a really easy change up.
Fabric.
Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. So what are some of the things that we should be, though, concerned about if we're looking at an MCM house? You said some of the things need to be updated at this point.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, it's been 70, 80 years on some of these houses. And that's enough time for things to begin to fail, particularly if they've been perfectly maintained, and sometimes that's the case when you get like a single owner home, all you need to do is change the things you want to change. But mid-century plumbing can last, but can also start to have eroded or you know, mineraled up on the inside. Some mid-century wiring can stand to be updated. And certainly when we upgrade a room entirely, like if you're going to change a kitchen out, if you're going to gut a kitchen, it won't meet modern code anymore with the number of outlets and the placement of lights that it has anymore. So you'll be doing a lot more of electrical wiring. Mm-hmm. The other thing to watch out for is in any older home, mid-century or before, you've got to look out for hazards like asbestos and lead paint, because we just, well, I say we didn't have the awareness. Actually, we were all, humans were aware that lead paint was super toxic in the 19-teens, mm-hmm. banned in Europe. We put it in walls well into the 1970s here. So that's lobbying and
yes.
capitalism and what have you. But it is, the reality is that you just need to be careful of those things. And it's nothing that can't be addressed, but it is something you want to be aware of and make your choices around. And then there's also like older furnaces, older heating systems, water systems. It's also, though, when you need to make these upgrades, a chance to bring in some sustainable technology, to bring in something more energy efficient, to switch out maybe a whole house furnace for a zone system with a heat pump, or think about how you can reduce your air conditioning load by planting some shade trees and having better indoor-outdoor flow. So we can always, every time we open up a wall, every time we're making a hole, taking off drywall, we're adding insulation, because mid-century homes had an idea of insulating the walls, unlike older homes where they basically didn't. They were like, look, it's you're inside because you're surrounded by walls and you're outside, you're not. Why would you insulate? Yeah. But the insulation from the mid-century period is proto. So it's not the best quality. We can do better now. So there's mm-hmm. a bunch of things that you can do as you have to sort of hit a maintenance thing. And what I love to do as a designer is think about how we can get a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1 out of every move we have to make. So if we need to replace a furnace, maybe that's a chance to think about relocating it to another place to create a more comfortable finished basement flow. Or if we have to replace a roof, that's the easiest time to pair it with an addition or to think about adding skylights or at least light tubes to bring in more daylight. So it always, I think a lot of people feel like they buy a house and they need to do the maintenance stuff first and then they can have the fun things. But that can often be a missed opportunity to get a design benefit or a lifestyle benefit or a fun satisfaction aesthetically out of an upgrade. And so I love to have people think about the big picture when they make their checklist of necessary to-dos and what can we win for them to match their lifestyle better or to make the house more fun at the same time.
Yeah, really, really good points. We're talking with Della Hansman. She's a Madison architect who specializes in mid-century modern design. Her business is called Mid-Mod Midwest. What questions do you have about this style of architecture? Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And this is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Clara Neipert is our on-air producer today, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be talking to the executive director of Habitat for Humanity Wisconsin. Right now, we're talking about mid-century modern design. And, Della, we do have an email from Marie in Wisconsin Rapids. She wants to know if you could comment on a bath remodel where a tub was taken out for a walk-in shower, but now she has no bathtub and she has a small ranch home. Any ideas on how to fix that situation?
Oh, that is such an interesting question. And I deal with the pros and cons of this with my clients all the time, because a lot of people are wanting to take out their bathtubs. If you only have adults in the house, if you're not a bather, and frankly, even if you do love to bathe, the classic mid-century compromise was that little 15-inch high, probably a fun color bathtub that's also a shower.
Yes.
It's great for bathing a toddler in, and it's not a place where a full-sized adult can really submerge their entire body. So I often tell my clients, I really recommend that people make personal choices for their houses rather than trying to remodel for resale or think about some sort of generic future person who might want things. I let people choose to take out the tub if they want to do it, which sounds like that's what happened in the previous case. It's always possible to put a tub back into the shower compartment in a future remodel, or depending on the needs in the household, it might be possible to think about another location for another bathroom, because a lot of mid-century houses have just one bathroom. It was the minimum viable house at the time, and I think people just had a slightly different sense of the luxuriousness they wanted in the bathroom then. So many of my clients are adding in another bathroom in the basement. There's often plumbing for it down there. It just needs to be sort of enclosed and given a concept rather than started from scratch or in a small addition. So it might be possible to not put back a tub in the place where it was originally removed and then add maybe even a fun soaking tub somewhere else. But if the frustration right now is you aren't a person who would have taken the tub out of your shower, it might be simplest to just remodel the shower compartment itself and put back a compromise mm-hmm. shower.
Okay, well, good luck, Marie. Yeah. we've got Vivian in Green Bay who has a question. Go ahead, Vivian.
Hello. I have a mid-century modern home that I try to keep in character, but I do not know what to do with the front concrete stoop. It's wide, probably 4 feet wide, just three steps, and it came with one wrought iron railing. And I'd like to upgrade or update that, and I have no idea. Do I stick with wrought iron? Can I be more creative with plastic porch railings?
Right, great question. Okay, so the front of your house is such a place filled with possibility to make the house your own and also to make hopefully mid-century friendly choices, but sometimes it's a way to make a misstep. I actually talk a lot about that sort of front door upgrade. And one thing we're seeing a lot, it's not necessarily an original mid-century idea, although it was around at the time, is to replace a front stoop with a little bit of a front deck, or not a front porch necessarily, because that might involve more of a change in the roof line, but a small expanded area. This is a question I always start with personality, with desire. Like, would you like to have a place where you could sit out on your front and wave at the neighbors with a cup of coffee in your hand, maybe have more opportunities for casual conversation? It can also just be a convenient thing if people are coming and going through the front door and where the pizza and the Amazon guys stand when they come in. But that minimum viable front stoop that you're talking about, which is so classic, 4 foot wide, 3 feet deep from the house, and then how many steps down depending on your grade, it can feel a little constricted. And so you can end up having it sort of jackhammered up and removed and put something else in the space. Or sometimes you can build a wider space out over it. How big of a change are you looking to make? Do you want a big project, or you just want something you can do to have a little bit better solution?
I'm okay with a more extensive project. I'd bite off my project as I have the money.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some money set aside to do this.
Well, I'm going to direct you. I actually have a resource about this. If you go to my website, midmod-midwest.com/front door, there's a long, extensive blog post and a free PDF download with some steps you can take to this. But in general, I think what you want to think about is how to tweak and replace a bunch of the sort of puzzle pieces of a front door area. If you want to make the house feel mid-century as you make changes, you don't have to have a wrought iron fence, but you do want to think about probably plastic, that sort of vertical style garden fence style is more of a cottage look than a mid-century look. So you want to think about wrought iron or maybe wood slats, or maybe you end up having a planter border or a bench that wraps around a little corner, that so you don't need a railing at all. You have a different type of guard to prevent people from falling off the edge. And if you do want to have a hand grab, there's a bunch of options in terms of fabricating something out of wood or a different arrangement of wrought iron. Some mid-century wrought iron is more floral. Some of it's more sort of geometric. And you've got a bunch of possibilities there. But thinking about what the house already is, do you know the build date of your house?
1966.
Okay. So 66, you can go a little more mod with your mid-century. So you can think about like a big asymmetrical geometric shape. I always come back to, I've sort of distilled down what I think of sort of the cornerstones of a mid-mod update. And they include asymmetry, because mid-century houses were not about that sort of classic cottage. Here's the center and then a window on each side and then shutters on each end of the window. It's really about the sort of playful, balanced, but asymmetrical look. So you might have a railing on one side that kind of the porch itself or the deck itself reaches towards the wider side of the house. You might think about also coming away from the front of the house a little bit more to think about, do you need like a privacy half wall that guards a sidewalk that sort of gives you a sense of layering between you and the street? And you also want to think about really simple shapes. Mid-century homes, occasionally a mid-century vintage will have floral wrought iron or something like that. But you want to think about geometry. You want to think about bold lines. And then you can give them the playful pieces of material and color. So you might want to take materials or colors you're already working with somewhere in the house. If there's any metalwork elsewhere, you might want to try to replicate that. Or you can start a new theme that you do in this project, and then in your next project, you'll pull in that same shape or that same color or that same material, and you'll start to make a language that's consistent but new in the house. So it all feels tied together, even if you do it project by project. And then the last thing to really think about is the flow. In this case, the flow from your front porch out to your sidewalk, and also the flow as you go into the house. So you might want to look at the living room. I'm assuming a mid-century front door typically enters into a living room. And what design elements are in there? If there's a metal that already exists in light fixtures, if there's a material in the fireplace hearth, if you have one, if that fireplace hearth has an offset or a stack bond brick pattern, you might pick up that same pattern and take it back outside. So you can kind of create that sense of the interior space is connected to the outside space. And you might also use that to help you decide what the standing on material is. So if you have a wood floor inside the living room, for example, you might choose a wood deck and you might try to hit the same kind of stain tone, warmth and darkness So as you walk in, it's subtle. You won't think about it every day, but psychologically, you'll just sort of feel like you're in a transition from inside to out there.
Okay, Vivian, good luck with that.
That was a lot, sorry.
Della, I can see why your business has expanded, because you really know how to help people out, you know, with all these answers. And you had mentioned about your website, and there is so much cool stuff on there. Tell us a little bit more about what else people can find there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm really on a mission to save every, this sounds so grandiose, but to save every ranch house in America from a mediocre remodel. I want people to love their homes. I want these homes to last, and mediocre doesn't last. It gets torn out and replaced, or sometimes torn down.
Yeah.
So I feel like making a mid-century shine in a mid-century house, because when you take, I think part of the reason we didn't appreciate these when we were younger was they were wrapped in vinyl. So they lost the subtle details of a little bit of vertical siding by the front door and then horizontal siding elsewhere. And they were painted beige, so they kind of faded into the landscape away from our eyes. But when you bring back those subtle details, mid-century homes are so great. And so anyway, my goal is to sort of help people at every level. I can't design one-off remodels for people in every ranch in America, but I can. I have a podcast where I talk about this every week with helpful practical tips. I have PDF resources on a bunch of different topics, like how to start from your coffee table and work outwards, or those cornerstones of mid-century design. And I just did a podcast series about that, which you can grab the free resource for that at midmod-midwest.com/cornerstones. And it'll walk you through sort of how to choose materials and how to make shapes that fit a mid-century ethos. I have a series of little design clinics talking about different parts of your house. I'm going to do a kitchen clinic talking about how to solve the common, everybody has these problems of mid-century homes, later in January. And you can find details for that on my website. And then also we have one of the reasons people feel stuck is that they feel like they don't have a sense of community around what they're trying to do. And they feel like nobody else likes their house like they do. Their contractor doesn't seem to approve of their choices. So I've created a community inside of a homeowner education program called Ready to Remodel, where I walk you through the steps of thinking about your home on a master plan perspective, tying together what you want, what the home is, and what you want it to look like, what you want being how you want to live in your house, not just what it looks like, and then brainstorming options and coming master plan vision for your own home. And I've got all the support you need to do that inside of the Ready to Remodel program. So I'm just basically trying to meet everyone where they are with the amount of time they have, with the amount of resources they have. And then I've just got so much free advice built up over, I don't know how I've been talking about this for 5 years, I think. So there's a lot on the website. Yeah.
And a quiz, folks, if you are a sucker for quizzes like me, and you will take it. It kind of helps you define your MCM style, right?
Yes. Oh, can I ask? What result did you get?
I don't remember now. It was the earlier version. So
mid-century vintage?
Yes, yeah. That was it. It was vintage.
That makes perfect sense.
Yep.
And it really helps because, again, mid-century is such a big term. Mm-hmm. To know a little more specifically, I like to encourage people to name their style, sometimes with a TV show, to say, you know, like, I'm looking for Brady Bunch. I'm looking for Jetsons. I'm looking for WandaVision. If you could pick up an episode.
Yes.
That really helps to talk to your spouse, your partner, your friends, people in sales showrooms, your contractor, and make sure you're thinking about the same thing when you talk about what you want to do.
And I found by doing that you also can narrow your search for things. So when you're talking about decor and whatnot, you know, it's much easier to say, okay, this is what I'm looking for, than the whole just broad thing. So that's helpful.
One of the things I've come to, and that I both do for my clients and teach to my students, is the idea of a style guide that you create for yourself, because it's not one answer. It's the right answer for you and your house. But we have an overwhelming abundance of choice with the entire internet at our fingertips. You can literally choose any sconce lamp. How could you possibly choose one? But if you say, you know I'm looking for mid-century vintage, so I'm ruling out the sort of more contemporary modernist stuff. I know in my house, I'm trying to just do sort of brass and stainless steel, those two as an interesting contrast, and not every different metal under the sun. I want all the lights in my house to have milk glass rather than clear glass. Then you can just, like, even on one website, you can just filter out a whole bunch of options you didn't need to look at that would, if you'd scrolled through them all, would have made you so tired by the time you got to the thing you really want, you couldn't identify it anymore.
For sure. And that's another point with our previous caller. She's looking for ideas. The internet is just jam-packed full of, you know, old pictures, especially that might be of inspiration. So
it can be so much fun to go back to the source to hit like a vintage Better Homes and Gardens. Actually, there's a resource. I should have this at my fingertips and I don't. USmodernism.com. USmodernist.com. Yes, it's USmodernist.com. I'm not affiliated with them, although no, that's not it. I'll find a website. I'm internet friends with the person who runs it, and they were just a person who had a mid-century home and came to love it.
Mm-hmm.
And they, USmodernist.org.
Okay.
Among other things, they started in North Carolina, I believe. Ooh, I hope I'm getting that right. But they started to document, to give tours, to interview old architects, and now they've put together, among other things, a digital library of vintage magazines. So you can just sit on your phone or your computer and scroll through. You don't have to go get microfiche anymore. And you can see all these great vintage ads and what people thought was really cool. Some of which you'll be like, oh yeah, of course. And other things you'll see and just shake your head. So
yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
I grew up with a set of old handyman books. They're like reference books for anything you could possibly want. And they were printed in the late 50s. So all of that is in there. And it is so fun to look for.
It was a DIY age. I think that's another reason it speaks to us, because I feel like we're in a very crafty generation.
Yes.
And I don't know why I don't feel like our parents, they spent their time differently.
Yeah.
But in the 50s, people were like, I'm going to get some simple woodworking tools and finish my basement myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
Yep. And they did.
Some of them did it better than others.
Yeah.
When you buy a house with a 60s era finished basement, you'll learn whether the person who owned your house was a good crafter or not. But it's fun.
Let's hear it for Naughty Pine. Okay, let's go back to the phones. We've got Lanny in Ashland who has a comment for us. Go ahead, Lanny.
Yeah, I just want to commend the speaker right now to keep on doing what you're doing, because I'm 72 years old, and I bought a lot of old homes, like Victorian homes, and refurbished them, painted them, and you know what? They just don't build homes like they used to anymore, you know? So
they don't.
Keep on doing what you're doing, and I know I've learned a lot of tricks in my trade. And I just love old homes, and they just don't make nothing better. So, I mean, Happy New Year to you, and you keep on doing what you got to do, girl, because you're doing a good job.
Well, thank you, Lanny. Appreciate that.
Yes, I completely agree. I think mid-century homes, we think of them as, if you look at the outside of them, they look a lot like a house built in the 70s or the 80s or even the 2000s in some ways. But on the inside, they're different. Mm-hmm. They are built with old growth pine. Mm-hmm. If you've ever tried to put a nail into a 2x4 in a house in a mid-century home, you'll know it's not the same animal. It's not the same thing you get at Home Depot today. It is.
Drill first.
Drill That's
first.
My strategy.
For sure.
I've spent a lot of nails in my basement.
Gosh, yeah. Well, we do have an email. Now, this is kind of an interesting question. So Michael in Madison, he and his wife are looking for an architect for their home. However, they have a 2-story home that is outside of mid-modern definition by about 20 years and was built in approximately 1986. Are those projects that you still support and work with homes outside of the traditional definition if they enjoy the same style element? So that's kind of a lot of questions in that. What do you think, Della?
Oh, well, actually, I can speak to this very specifically. I used to feel that anyone who liked the mid-century style was someone I could help. And these days, we're so busy. And learned that what we can do is best done for homes that were built in the mid-century era. It's part of the way, actually, that we're able to work remotely with homeowners all over the country is because the construction techniques are really consistent. In that moment, they just had come up with a new way to build, and they built that way here in California, in Florida, slightly different materials, but I know what's going on inside the walls without ever having seen them. So we have limited ourselves now to homes built in the mid-century era and owned by people who want to make more mid-century friendly choices for mm-hmm. them, whether vintage or updated, but still within that family. But I do encourage anyone who's listening who lives in a house not built in the mid-century era that the design moves of the mid-century era are very well applied to houses built later that often sort of don't have as much style baked in, but you can still bring in, you can still play with asymmetry, you can still use the mid-century color schemes and find vintage furniture and make sort of simple modernist choices in a cabinetry update. All of those things work, but that's not a service that we provide anymore because we've just had to get more narrow.
You're not that huge of a company, so you can only do so much, right?
We are a three-person team, and we basically, these days we do about 3 master plans a month, and that's how we do one-to-one design services for people, where we have a process where we take them through a discovery phase where we're asking, we give our clients homework, sit down with your partner if you've got one, with your kids if they're old enough, talk about, are you introverts, are you extroverts, is this a refuge or a gathering space, you know, what is the feeling of your home, and then assessing the house itself, and then figuring out the style, then we come up with options, and we look at the house space by space, and I love the Goldilocks rule, so I like to give people 3 options, a sort of least possible. This would solve some of your problems, but it's the most affordable, the least work. A big reach one, you might try for this, and then something in the middle. And most of our clients end up then sort of choosing an a la carte solution, so a bigger choice in one space, a more modest choice in another, to tune their budget to find the answer that's going to work for them. And then we also help people break apart their plans into what you're going to do this year, what you might do in 2 years, what you might do in 5 years. So it all feels consistent and it's all pre-planned. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we just can't help that many people anymore. So we have to keep ourselves within a boundary. Yeah.
Right. Well, we have time for one more comment here. We've got Rusty in Dalton. Go ahead, Rusty.
Hello. I just wondered if your guest knew about Lustron homes. They were made in the 50s. They were entirely made out of metal. Hello?
They are marvelous. Yes. And did you say you were in Madison? We have actually a handful of them in Madison, and they are remarkably cool. Metal on the inside and the out. If you want to hang a picture on a wall in a Lustron home, you hang it with a magnet.
I love it. And what are they called again? What's the style?
Lustron homes, Lustron. And they were actually... there were several thousand of them manufactured and shipped all over the U.S. They were made by a guy who really wanted to make gas stations and sell those mass-produced. But at the moment that he wanted to get a contract with the government for that, they said, no, what we want is houses. And he said, okay, I can do houses this way. And he did. And they are quite cool.
I love it. I love it. Well, Della, I have so many more questions, and we are out of time. So you know what that means. We're going to have you back again.
I would love to be back.
All right.
This has been so fun.
We'll be in contact. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We've been talking with Della Hansman. She's a Madison architect who specializes in mid-century modern design. Her business is called Mid-Mod Midwest. Just Google it if you want to know more information. Up next, we're going to take a look at Habitat for Humanity. So stay with us.